Blog Talk Radio.
www.transparency.help and our Blog Talk Radio show. I am delighted to be here with you today. Actually, this is my sanity piece of the week for me. Steve is a great part in helping me feel sane again. And I just wanted to welcome you all and say a big shout out. I'm excited about this transform journey we're beginning to take and thankful that Steve is willing to take it with us because I would not be able to do it alone. How was your weekend?
Well, Saturday, we did a lot of busy stuff, of course, the Super Bowl. But on Saturday, Hands of Mercy is an organization that builds loft homes. It's in Mexico. And they partner with churches, and they happen to partner with California Baptist University on Saturday, and they had 400 students, and they had five churches that they wanted to partner with them to build five of these homes, and of course we build all the parts to these homes, and then we trailer them down and then build them there. But it was really so cool because they had 10 stations, and these kids were going on missions this summer. That's why they were there, to work as a team. And they wanted us to focus on telling them nothing about the project, which they were going to learn later that day. And they just wanted them to be told what to do and not have to ask any questions.
Imagine that.
These are college kids. Oh, my gosh. And so from start to finish, they were nailing and
willing to do it.
And they did what they were told. And then they didn't push back. I mean, they acted like kids once in a while. But
yeah.
It was a very cool, I'll use the word scheme loosely here, very good plan to help us understand the mission field is we have a picture that God has a plan, and then what really happens
I know, right?
is the plan. And so we ran out of stuff, and we had to tell them, here's what, and this is what's going to happen on the mission field, and you got to learn. And it was very, very
so
cool.
So you did like have issues, you had problems.
Every hour, a new set of kids.
Wow.
All day long, started at 8 and got done at 5.
But there were circumstances that came up beyond your control.
Yes.
Where
yes.
you were able to
yeah,
like,
so we
totally
said, well,
train them.
Oh, yeah. We said, hey, we ran out of stuff, but you know this happens on the field. We're going to come up with something a little different. You have to pick up all the nails.
Yeah, right?
Well, that's not what we can. I said, I'm sorry, but that's how it goes. You know,
that's
so,
what you got to do right now.
So it was a very cool experience for them. The school, very, very wise in helping them little touch it before you go there thing. You know.
Interesting. So. Okay, so I just have to touch on this for a minute. That Super Bowl game. OMG. Did you watch it?
It was sad at the end.
I have to tell you, I was rooting for Seahawks. I was okay with them losing until they threw those punches. And then I was disgusted. I was so sad. I was like, are you kidding
boys
me?
Boys in men's bodies, what do? You know, here it is. That's sad. That's sad.
I thought, man, do they ever need some transformation? Deal with their issues.
Send them your website.
I'm serious. Oh, I was so bummed. And I thought to myself, they're going to regret that, don't you think?
Well, if not internally, maybe somewhere literally, financially, who knows. But, yeah, it's a sad, sad way to win and lose.
But don't you think that your stuff eventually comes up to bite you? Like, eventually.
Absolutely.
You know, you keep blowing by the emotional dashboard. You know, you blow out the signals. You do this. You do that. Eventually, you're going to run into yourself. You're going to have to deal with stuff. You know, I was thinking today about someone from a situation from this weekend. It's like, I was like, you got to grieve it to leave it.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
You got to grieve it to leave it. You got to own it to disown it. And so that's what Transform is all about. And, oh, man, it's just really tough with all this stuff he gives us sometimes,
yes.
I'm telling you.
More than we ask for.
Mm-hmm.
Both
yes.
ways.
Too much is given, much is required. Okay. So we are going to actually get into the second of the 8 roots that lead us doing the same thing, expecting a different result. Roots that we need to actually, you know, just understand before we can break free. And, you know, I want to make it very clear that the difference with this curriculum and all other recovery programs is, you know, we believe in the love of God totally, being able to being a vital part of the transformation journey. But something I have realized a long time ago is you know, God used Steve in mine, okay? And but there was a clog in my pipe. It wasn't that God wasn't strong enough to get rid of that clog in the pipe. He loved me enough to bring me, for instance, Steve and other instruments that would do the unclogging,
mm-hmm.
if you will.
Sure.
You know, because to just say that, you know, you come to Christ and all that stuff is gone, I'm sorry, it's just picture a pipe full of roots. Does it work after a while? It really doesn't. You know what I'm saying? And so,
uh-huh.
yeah, and so, and the pipe is still getting unclogged, I will tell you, but I'm virtually root-free, but they still try to sprout up. So we're going to get into the second one. And again, what we're doing right now is just kind of building the framework. We're just going to give you a dictionary definition for the actual root. We're going to give you an acrostic that was given to me by my divine power, and we are going to give you maybe a biblical fact and just some little tidbit about the actual root itself. We are not delving into it by any means. We're just kind of building the house, if you will, building the frame.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
So the next one, we did fear last week. We touched on fear, and I was saying something in class the other night, and somebody said, "Well, how can you fear fear?" And that's possible, right? Because I said,
sure.
you fear fear, and that just, like, came out.
Hmm.
But you do. Everybody fears fear, and that's why they stay stuck. So we're going to move on to guilt and shame, and it's important that we understand they're two separate, but they work together, right?
Well, yes. I think we confuse the guilt factor. We have guilt. God has built in guilt. There's guilt by definition, where if I violate a rule or a law, I am guilty by definition of doing something that was asked of me not to do. That makes me guilty. Excuse me. Then there's remorse that goes along with guilt. And I think some of us have more of a conscience than we should. And sometimes it works against us because the feeling of remorse is not the same as beating ourselves up, but we take it another level, actually, and parents are kind of good at helping this process, and we get into being shamed.
Yeah.
And so if we separate the two concepts, guilt is asking us what we did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guilty or not? Did you speed down the freeway or not? Did you hit your wife or not? How do you plead guilty
yeah.
or not guilty?
Yeah. No. And that's in any offense. Did you talk crap about someone?
Well, that's right.
Yeah, it's in anything.
So it's a yes or no question whether you feel like you've done it
guilt
or not.
Guilt asks yes or no.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So you just need to have it in clear terms about if you're guilty, great, you are guilty, which doesn't make you anything less or more than human.
That's right.
Because we are going to do things because we're selfish, just like at the ball game. Obviously, the guys got a little tweaked and felt whatever they felt and needed to express what they felt. But they were guilty of something that they should not have been doing.
Yeah.
And they are going to probably pay a price. I'm sure it's possible that there will be fines, if you will.
Monetary.
Not whether they feel like
yeah.
they did anything wrong or not, it doesn't really matter. So the shaming factor, a little more colorful, if you will, but shame mm-hmm. asks, what's wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
And the, how these two things go together is, as children, when we would do things that we were guilty of, because we were children and self-centered and selfish. When our parents would parent us, if they left it objective and said, wow, you made a choice. Well, that's really a bummer for you. You're going to be spending time in your room. Or bummer, you made a choice to hit someone, so there's going to be more. Maybe you'll be spanked yourself. And that is all emotionless, ideally. However, parents see their
supposed
kids.
Supposed to be.
Well, yeah, supposed to be.
Yeah.
Parents see their kids as extensions of themselves, and so the parent resents their child for being human. How dare they? When, I don't know why we're surprised, when we're born deceitfully and desperately wicked, including our children, we are Adams by birth. So what the parent does is they then add to the guilt of the child who did something wrong to make them feel that something is wrong with them, and that's communicated without words. That's an attitude. You hit your brother? So the tone of that is, what's wrong with you?
Right.
And so the kid has no answer for that because they don't even know what just went in. But then they're made to feel like, wow, I'm really messed up. And so now my worthiness, my self-confidence, the shame factor of my existence then dictates, depending on the child.
Mm-hmm.
Some children then begin to feel like they have to prove their worth all the time.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that happen.
And they're having to prove it because they now continue to be normal, which is to be guilty, which is to have done something wrong. But they think they're kind of extra special because they want to believe then that I'm unique doing it wrong.
Well, and
other,
you know,
kids don't do this.
A perpetual cycle. I will tell you, it's a perpetual cycle. And many parents don't realize, wouldn't you say, they're very, very unconscious of the way they heap shame upon their kids.
Yes.
A lot of times it's just, and to me, guilt is quiet and shame screams. If you can imagine that, you know, when you look in a mirror, does the mirror talk back and scream at you? No, you know, and that's the beauty of guilt, you know. Shame is more man created, right?
Well, yes, and of course, Jesus was working against the messaging of the Pharisees. I mean, how do you not feel bad about yourself when they had 1,000 rules to obey or not obey? Mm-hmm. Do or don't do 1,000 things, and on a consistent basis, you get to show up every week and say, well, here I am again.
Yeah.
And, of course, the piety of the Pharisees and Sadducees made it feel like some are really worse than others because they wouldn't confess their humanity. They made you feel like you were the only one that mm-hmm. did those things, and that's why Jesus came to level the field, to make everyone know no matter what you've done, you're worthy of love. No matter what you've done, you're worthy of acceptance.
Yeah.
And the shame factor makes it feel like, wow, something's so wrong with me. Who would want to love me?
Well, and it's crazy because I'm just going to tell on myself and share a situation that happened a few weeks back, and the light for me just went on about how it made George feel, okay?
Her husband.
My husband. But we were going through a rough time, and welcome to life, welcome to marriage. Okay, hello. And I had actually said to him, well, actually, I was writing on my computer how miserable I am in my marriage.
Just happened to be.
I was on the airplane, and he just happened to be looking over, apparently. I didn't know that he had seen it. And he did see that. And, of course, he withdrew, and there goes the shame. And let me tell you how I understood this. I finally got this. And so he said something to me when we finally actually talked the next day. And he said, well, if you're so miserable, then I'll give you a divorce. And I said, George, I am miserable, and so are you. But so what? So it's out in the open now. It's the elephant that we've now kicked. Can we now do something about it? But there's no shame attached to it.
No, it's
but
a fact.
He made it all about shame because he took it as, it, you know, I was saying it's all his fault. Or
something's wrong with him.
Right.
I could do better.
I wasn't saying what's wrong with you, and I wasn't trying to shame him. I was just stating a fact, being very transparent, which is a curse at times, and saying,
well, that's
I'm
a good lead into. So if we've had a history of a lot of shaming in our childhood and made to feel less than, it makes it really tough then for your mate or anyone else to come to you and say, wow, when you did that, that hurt me.
Yeah.
When I'm talking about me, and how can you know what you do that hurts me until I tell you that hurts me? But instantly, the listener, the party that did the hurting, gets to feel or starts to feel because of their history. Now, here are the roots that create this whole process of I can't hear you because it makes it feel like to me you're talking about me. And so the sender has no hope. What other way then can I tell you, and how otherwise can you change if I'm not free to say, wow, I know you didn't mean to do that, but when you use those words, it hurt me very deeply. Because maybe you use the words that your mom and dad used on you, or maybe that's the only way you know how to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can't see ourselves. That's why they call this transform. Mm-hmm. We can't transform ourselves. We have broken in relationship. And we can only be healed in relationship. And so my transformation can only come with somebody who loves me enough that they would dare say, I know you didn't mean that, but when you did that, that hurt me very badly. Mm-hmm. And so it gives you a chance to see the part in the mirror you can't see without a person in front of you kind of being the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, when you equate all the things you might have done as a child, and let's say you did those things as a child, and your parents made you feel like you were rejectable, then it makes it tough for anybody to take that risk with you.
And I want to ask you, and then I'll get into these definitions for you. I love applying real life to what we're talking about. And I actually had someone who I'm thinking about, and she may even be listening right now, you know, how is it that you make that change? You know what I mean? It's like,
how do you transform your thinking?
Yeah, how do you transform your thinking? And I just basically shared with her, you know, it's a constant renewing of the mind. It's putting into practice the tools that you are now learning.
Right.
But it is hard. It's not easy. And then someone else I was sharing with earlier, she said, when I started reading this book, the book How We Love, because this is for that trench class, she said, oh my gosh, I've cried out. I've been so angry and I've been crying. And she says, but I know that I have to do this to heal. And I said, the road to healing is painful but worth the drive.
Okay. Oh, there we go. Yeah,
that's
just
like
cool.
Came out. It's like,
that's great.
I have to keep reminding myself that right now because of the whole meekness thing, that God loves me enough to make sure to begin in me. So so anyways, there's, you know, somebody that I know is just, she said, how is it that I can stop thinking about this so much?
Right.
You know, and how do you? How do you kind of take a mental break from
all that's
the
whole
learning?
Shaming factor, I think. Awareness is a complicated thing, but without awareness, you can't change. And we see those things on paper that describe our history or describe either from where we came or describe how we've been. And it's tough to admit, but until we can see it or someone tells us, we can't change it. And so part of that is Joyce Meyer has a book at
Battlefield
of the Mind, How to Take Every Thought Captive and Realize It's Information, Not Condemnation.
That's an awesome point. It's information, not condemnation. And I've actually said to her, relax a little bit with that, you know, just because it is tough.
And what I try to have couples understand when they come in, especially when I go over their history, we talk about their personality, and we talk about their background, and then instead of what's wrong with you for doing what you do, it's, well, of course you do what you do.
Yeah.
Of course that's how you treat your mate. Of course that's how you react. That's what you saw. And so if you can see what you read, this person that Vinda's talking about, that sees it as a description so that you can at least validate, yes, that was me, and yes, that's what is what happened, then it sets us more free than feeling like something was wrong. Well, no, nothing's wrong. That's natural that, you know, it's cause and effect. You know, it's behavior modification. Of course, that's how you react.
Behavior modification. I
well,
love it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's how you learn under those circumstances. It's like reflex now. Somebody lifts their hand and you duck like a dog almost.
Yeah, so like,
know.
How does that ever like go away? She's wanting to know. And I think it does.
It starts, well, first of all, it starts with being aware, but it starts with being able to tell someone, this is how I'm feeling. This is what it feels like when you, and I need to help you understand me, which is not about you. But then when you notice that I back up a little bit, when you try to come close, why do I back up? Well, I back up because I'm afraid. Nothing about you has done that. But now that I'm realizing it's not only not you, but I can also have another choice besides backing up. I can move forward.
I wanted to say a shout out. I see that we have Jennifer Wyatt, which is our virtual assistant.
Oh,
She's our, like, CPM savior, if you will. You know, just all that stuff. She's the one who wrote the SOPs.
Okay.
Yeah, and now the virtual
SOPs are
standard operating procedures for CPM. Yeah, we're getting all official here. And then Jen is on there. So
great.
Welcome. But I wanted to give you the call number, too. We keep forgetting to do that.
If you want
to
call in.
If you ever want to call in, it is area code 347-215-6697. Again, that's 347-215-6697. Feel free to call in, and we haven't had that happen in ages. I don't know if we would be able to figure it out, but we would try. And with a question you might have, if you want to become part of the show, or you need an answer to a crisis or whatever, call us in the midst of our show. We would love to talk with you. So let's go ahead and give you some dictionary definitions, if you will, with the understanding that guilt and shame, while they are separate, they kind of are like the egg and the yolk. They kind of work together, okay? So they go hand in hand because you couldn't have one without the other. Guilt is the fact of having committed a breach of conduct, especially violating law and involving a penalty. Broadly, it means guilty conduct. Now, if you take out law, and put, what were you saying right before we went
well,
on air?
Well, we're going to actually change the word involving a penalty. There's always a consequence.
Consequence.
The issue of guilt is, I mean, if you violate the law of gravity, there will be a consequence of falling very quickly and landing very hard when you want to jump off a 10-foot wall. You can't change that. So you break the law of gravity, you violate the law of gravity, and you'll have a consequence. You violate the law of the road and speed, you are going to get a ticket.
Right.
So that has nothing to do with you at all. Did you or did you not do those things? And your children need to be able to admit that so they're not too afraid versus living in denial. Of course, we as parents help them live in denial or make it less than it was. Well, it's not so bad, or compared to someone else. And so they're never free to actually be able to say, you know what, I did that. I mean, how cool. The first time you can actually, when someone said, did you do that? And they said yes. And someone says, well, thank you for being honest with me.
Yes.
And not feel like you're going to be condemned or criticized or, okay, you're out of here, rejected.
Yeah.
I mean, how free would it be if we could live in a country not to feel so afraid?
And yet I think it takes people, because I know I had that experience with the last person who helped in the office. And she had a hard time owning stuff. And then she did own something. And the very first thing I said was, thank you so much for owning that.
Well, how much trust do we need? Yeah. And there's a relationship with a couple right now. They're not married. And he believes that she has lied, and he said, I can have all these five or six other things that are okay that I can, you know, kind of work with, but to lie is a deal killer, kind of. If I can't trust you with the simplest thing that I think I'm asking, how will I know the rest of what you tell me is the truth?
Yeah.
And so that little thing, you're guilty of lying, but the consequence of that is not really about you. It's about the effect it has on other people. And if they're going to have a relationship with you, trust is really not optional.
Yeah, trust is, I mean, trust to me is as important as love, if not more so. Anyways, okay, so also let me finish up the definition of guilty. The state of one who has committed an offense, especially consciously. Now, I think doing that, giving that little caveat is important, especially consciously. How can you be guilty if you're not aware? Right?
Sure.
Right? So, and we have a lot of things for which people are not aware. And something that I was able to share in class last Thursday, I said, I have some bad news for you all. Up until tonight, you weren't aware of this, but now you are. So, you know, too much is given, much is required. You're now accountable. So once you become aware, then you become responsible to do something with that information. And so, okay, so then the guilt thing, this is where the feeling thing comes in. Feelings of culpability, especially for imagined offenses or from a sense of inadequacy. Does that mean it stems from a sense of inadequacy? Like we could have this false guilt, which stems from our own lack of confidence in ourselves?
Well, yes, and it's curious. We make up things that we feel guilty of that have nothing to do with right or wrong.
And don't we project it onto others?
Well, we project it onto others or a situation. Those kids, for instance, that came to build. A galvanized nail is softer because it's galvanized and it's used so it doesn't rust when it's on a siding that goes on the side
really?
Of a house.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's why it's galvanized.
Love life. Just teaches
so it. So feels, you know, again, imagine sense of inadequacy. What is this? So they nail it down and a nail bends.
Okay, because it's softer.
And instantly she goes, I'm sorry.
Oh, poor thing.
Well, that's the whole thing, a sense of inadequacy. It has nothing to do with being wrong.
Right.
But all of a sudden, you feel your emotions take over like something's wrong with you.
Wow.
Or, you know, we're out there playing volleyball in my house, you know, and we have lots of people over there, and this person claims before they start that I'm probably not a good teammate. And every time they hit the ball, it doesn't go where it's supposed to, and they're just constantly saying, oh, I'm not a good player.
Oh, dear.
And I just want to slap these people. Get over it. But in any case.
Okay, we're going to answer a question from the chat room. I think this is really important.
Okay, what is it asking? It
says, how about if someone takes on everyone's feelings and then feels upset that those same people don't take on theirs? Is that guilt or shame? I think it's a combination of both.
Well, yes, there's something wrong with us. And instead of dealing with, I think it's a talk about a false expectation without realization. That's what fear is. Yeah, I think it's almost like saying, I don't want to be the only one in the room that feels bad. I don't want to be in the only one. I take on their feelings. I want them to take on mine, you know.
Well, see, and there needs to be that pure heart, that pure motive. What is your expectation?
Right.
What is your motive?
Yes. And so it's like, if I have to feel inadequate, I want you to feel inadequate.
Yeah. That's
if I have to be bad, I mean, that's wrong motivation, if you will.
You know, and this definitely stems from a childhood issue in that the parent always helped her feel less than, if you
yes.
will. Okay. So where does she make the change? I mean,
well, we have to, first of all, instead of assuming something already, mm-hmm. the question already assumes that we have to be responsible,
right.
number one, which we don't have to. Secondarily, everything you do, like bending that nail, we call that a mistake. It's an unintended error. You didn't...
A mistake.
Yeah, you mistook.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't plan to. And so these feelings of things that we have nothing to do, and sadly, personality has a lot to do with it, because some people are born with high, high sensitivity. And that high sensitivity translated into negative is really tough to kind of be you, because it's almost everything you do is inadequate.
Which,
everything you do feels less than.
If you were born, you know, it's funny, they were watching the video last week and George said, so can you be born like that? Remember the part with Kay, the twins? Remember
right.
the part that was showing? And you could tell which one was Kay and which one wasn't Kay.
Right.
And
George, these people don't know what you're talking about.
We're talking about in our How We Love class, we showed the DVD, and it showed one of the authors as a child with her twin sister, and how the parent kept trying to get her to do a certain thing and just was really just annoying her, just like trying
sure.
to get her to behave a certain way. But the question was asked, are you born that way? And so, yes, we're born either introverted or extroverted, and yet how we are loved either distracts
magnifies.
Or magnifies. Yeah.
Well, what's sad is, and that goes back to siblings being compared, why can't you be like?
Right, right.
Automatically, what's wrong with you? And it's almost like, I'm sorry for being me, and it's almost like, I'm sorry for not being my sister.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry for not being my brother. We're us, and these rules, and that's why the laws we're talking about that you get to feel guilty of, by the way,
mm-hmm.
many are man-made. And you go to somebody else's house, nobody cares at all.
Right. I wanted to respond one more thing to the person's question. Wouldn't a good question be for her to ask herself as she's taking on everyone's feelings and expecting them to take on hers?
Right.
What am I needing right now?
Well,
what
yeah, if emotion is need-driven,
right.
okay, if you step on my foot, I'll get off my foot. And what is the need in time and over time, it takes time, to feel obligated? I mean, it's called a secondary gain. You know, there's some value to you rescuing the world. There's some value to feeling obligated to take on everyone's pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so the problem with that is then that creates an expectation, which is exactly what you kind of said. There are some
mm-hmm.
people that have excessive ability to give excessive time, emotion, income, and sadly for those people, they also then expect that other people would be equally reciprocal, that other people would give. Now, we're fortunate that our Savior realized that all the things he was going to give were probably not likely to be returned, but it's something that God called him to do and therefore gave him adequacy to do and therefore did not resent anyone else not doing it for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a mature position. It's really tough because, yes, we feel like we are used. And so we have to figure out is, you know, I'm going to stop caring so much, but I'm going to stop and nurture myself if other people can't get time to
well,
do that.
And it's curious because she said it's so hard to know what my needs are. That is part of the problem.
Yes,
correct?
That your world has been so, and again, if you're in a shaming situation, you're always focused on what makes everyone else happy when really I'm trying to focus on what makes them not unhappy.
Unhappy, yeah. So that's the other.
It isn't about making them happy. I don't want them mad at me. I don't want them upset. And so you learn a way of life.
Called surviving, definitely not thriving. And we have gotten the signal to end our show. So next week we will pick up with shame because we didn't even get through the acrostic or anything, but we'll pick up with some definitions for shame. And so glad that you're there. Pass the word along so we can have more interaction in the chat room and be able to address more issues on this transformation journey. Hey, make it a great week.
Bye-bye.